I'm sorry, but I'm not ready to let the canal thing go just yet. Everyone I talked to about the irrigation system in Cache Valley seemed to be dancing around something. When they talk about community or culture or folklore, they mean Mormon, don't they?
Yeah, it's wicked Mormon.
I mean, you've got the streets,
the poplar trees, and the ditches. And, you know, Frank Avila, whoever wrote that book, said if you drop someone from Mars and they saw the streets, the trees, and the ditches, they would know they were in Utah.
Then I found Catherine Morse, a professor of history and environmental studies at Middlebury College in Vermont. She wrote a paper called Nature's Second Course, Water Culture in the Mormon Communities of Cache Valley, Utah, 1860 to 1916. So I knew we would probably get along just fine. I called her up. So how does a professor in Vermont know so much about Logan Canals?
In 1988, just after I graduated from college, I enrolled at Utah State University in the master's degree program in history. And between 1988 and 1990, I lived in Logan and researched my master's thesis on the history of the Logan River irrigation system in Cache Valley.
It's not just about the history itself. I mean, you begin with the symbolism of water. What specifically, I mean, water symbolizes a whole lot.
It does. It can symbolize almost anything you want it to symbolize.
Right. So specifically, the early Mormon pioneers, were there specific symbols that water represented for them?
Well, in the study, I ended up finding a bunch of different powerful symbolic meanings. One of which is a basic agrarian belief that's central to all of American culture, and pioneer Mormon culture was sort of a profound distillation of elements of American culture, which is the commandment of a higher power or of God to create an agricultural paradise or Eden in the uncivilized world of the American West. And, you know, millions of different Anglo-Americans did that, but Mormons did it with particular focus and energy. And in that agrarianism, the idea of creating a green Eden in a desert, in that sort of biblical sense, led them to apply themselves with great energy to bringing water to the land, to bringing baptismal forces of life to the replenishment of what seemed like a desert, a lost or fallen place that needed to be restored to an Edenic state. That's why they call irrigation reclamation, because it reclaims a fallen world into a paradise.
Speaking of the non-separation of church and state, water rights in Utah, and it's not specific to Utah, but it was articulated very well in Utah. We always talk about this beneficial use condition, so that you can have the water and it is yours to be a steward of, but
yes,
you have to prove that you are using it beneficially. In your paper, you say that early on that beneficial use meant beneficial in the eyes of the church.
What's so fascinating is it's almost impossible to separate the religious mission of the community from the use of water, because everyone initially in those very early decades was by and large Mormon, and therefore the beneficial use to create homes, to irrigate crops, to feed livestock, to raise families, was part of the mission of the religious group itself. So it's really hard to find a place in which those two missions, to create an agricultural community of saints, was separate from the beneficial use of water.
So a lot of the canals are still uncovered. They were uncovered then, and they are uncovered now. Was it important to the pioneers to have them uncovered for sort of practical reasons or more symbolic reasons? I mean, why is the water still kind of on display?
Well, I certainly wrote in the paper that the ostentatious display of water is part of the sort of pride and declaration that nature has been subdued to create a vibrant, successful community, that in a desert a community could achieve such mastery of water as to control it so beautifully and channel it so fruitfully into a green and verdant village landscape. It definitely seems, if not ostentatious, then pride in the control of nature for higher purposes. But I imagine it started because that was the cheapest way to do it, that running water along the surface in dirt canals was fast, was quick, and was easy to create. And then being able to eyeball the supply meant that you could distribute it relatively quickly and easily all you had to do to figure out how much water was in the ditch was look in the ditch. So leaks are easily identified and fixed. Floods are easy to see coming, and damage is relatively quick to find and repair. Wouldn't be the case if these were pipelines buried or aqueducts that could be damaged. So it probably was a combination of cultural value and low capital investment at the start.
In the second case, not much has changed.
The Central Arizona Project, I mean, it's a late 20th century engineering marvel, and it's still piping water uncovered across the hottest desert in the nation.
Right.
Yeah, so it seems to be an American thing to keep the water visible from the surface.
You probably haven't been to City Creek Mall yet in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, I was there in the late 90s. I haven't been into any of the new malls.
Yeah, they basically built a mall around what used to be City Creek and turned City Creek into a Las Vegas-style artificial
waterway. A water feature.
A feature, yes.
Yeah.
Did you have a water share when you lived in Logan? Did you have any experience with using
the ditch? I was in rental apartments that were up near the university that weren't fully served that way. But mostly I would just ride my bike and look and watch how the water was moving and sort of get curious about where it came out of various ditches and how it crossed streets. So I didn't have the personal experience of opening and closing the gates. But I would bike the canal routes up north towards Hyde Park and see where they went. And it was beautiful. I mean, it's a very beautiful landscape in many ways.
Do you teach about the Mormon irrigation system? Do you teach water in the West or anything like that in Vermont?
Not in great detail, but yes, I teach a history of the American West and an environmental history, and I certainly used the information about Logan and showed students the map and the way the village grid is so beautifully imposed on the canyon landscapes at these specific points along the Wasatch Front, and how that was a clear adaptation to both aridity and abundance in those places along the valley. And, of course, New England, many Mormons did come from upstate New York and New England, so there are similarities. I live in an agricultural valley dominated by dairy farms. There are towns named Mendon and Hyde Park. There are similarities. So there are ways to talk about how agrarian values and agrarian landscapes appear in different forms across the country.
Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been so interesting.
All right, and say hi to the ditches for me.
I will do.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Source comes from the studios of Utah Public Radio. I'm Jennifer Pemberton. I produce this here program, and I'm grateful for financial support from iUtah. My obsessive canal story was wonderfully produced by Ryan Cunningham. James Singer was the voice of the pioneers in that story. I got a lot of help and a lot of irrigation documents I couldn't make sense of from Bob Parson at the USU Special Collection and Archives. Thank you, Ross Chambliss, for always finding water stories with me. Thank you, Megan Simper, for writing our theme song that I will never tire of. And thank you for listening. Let's do it again at the end of next month.